Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bull & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bull & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
What is going on with Bijan Robinson? Is Tony Pollard worse than James Conner rest of season? Is the tight end position, like, super deep, really great? Everyone is a great tight end all of a sudden. I'm not buying it, people. And did you know that as we sit here right now, on November 6th, the Buffalo Bills are out of the playoffs? It is beyond the box score. I am Adam Azer with Jacob Gibbs and Dan Schneier. We have advanced stats from Simple People. Good afternoon. It's afternoon. Good afternoon, Jacob and Dan. What's up?
How's it going? I'm having a good day. How about you guys?
Good. I'm doing well. Jacob, how about you?
Excited to be here.
And you know what? Based on what I ate this morning, I have an Italian food tip for fake Italian Dan Schneier. Italian food tip for
what?
You.
No, it's not. Can we clear this up? It's not fake Italian. It's wannabe Italian.
Whatever it is. Wannabe Italian Dan Schneier. I have an Italian food tip for you and for everyone else. Real quick, before we get into the games, I'm going to give you the playoff matchups. You pick a winner. We'll start in the NFC. Eagles with a bye. Lions hosting the Vikings.
Lions.
The slaughter. 49ers hosting the Cowboys.
49ers. They always crush the Cowboys.
It's another slaughter. Saints hosting the Seahawks.
Ugh.
Yeah. Saints.
Saints because the home field advantage, which I don't even like, but Taysom Hill will get like two touchdowns in that game.
All right. The 4-5 matchup. The Dolphins hosting the Steelers.
Dolphins.
Steelers are in the playoffs. Wow. Yeah. Dolphins, yeah.
The Jaguars hosting the Browns. That is interesting.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I'll go Jags.
I'll go Browns.
Yeah, I go Browns. Nah, well, it depends. If current Browns with Deshaun Watson, we're going to talk about him. We all watched Deshaun Watson, or Dan and I did. He looked horrible. So I'll take the Jags. And then your 2-7 matchup.
I needed an upset.
The poor Ravens. Get the Cincinnati Bengals right now.
Ooh,
it won't stay that way. You'd have to figure. But Ravens hosting the Bengals.
Wow. I'm still going Ravens at home.
Yeah.
But wow.
I'm going Bengals. Bengals are the best team in the NFL. I am picking them to win the Super Bowl.
Whoa.
Yes.
I like the boldness of that.
I mean, look, they're healthy. They're great. They have the best combination.
Good.
Of offense and defense. They don't have the best offense. They don't have the best defense. They have the best combination of offense and defense.
I don't know, man. I'd have to give it to the Chiefs, the team with the best quarterback in the NFL and maybe the best defense in the NFL.
I mean, like, he's okay, Mahomes, but yeah. All right, let's get to the game. The Bengals beat the Bills 24-18 en route to the Super Bowl. They had the ball for 36 minutes and 38 seconds. So the Bills just did not have a lot of possession here. Less than 24 minutes of possession. Gabe Davis with no catches on two targets. Jacob, what are your major takeaways fantasy-wise from this game?
Yeah, the Gabe Davis usage was frustrating. Last week, they used him in line a lot more. A lot of short yardage stuff went to him as the first read a lot. And so I thought that might be a role change with Dawson Knox out of the picture and Kincaid less of a slot guy, using those kind of short targets, but same back, right back to the same old, in week 9, 10 yard average route depth, 18 yard average depth of target, no catches. So that's really frustrating to see because it was a good matchup for him. Also frustrating on the Bills side, James Cook had an amazing matchup. And it's like, you know, Leonard Fournette is looming. This is like the spot, you know, if we're ever going to get it from James Cook. And it's just the same thing, like not nearly enough usage for him to be fantasy relevant. So I think we're pretty much done with him, which is tough because running back is, we're running out of options.
I don't know if I'm done with him. I just think that this game script, they're not going to be getting blown out. What were they down, 24-10 or something like that? So, they couldn't run the ball. And like I said, the time of possession was really low. He had four catches, which was nice. I think he's exited the must-start territory, unfortunately. The touchdowns are hard to come by. The catches are unpredictable. But they just didn't run the ball really at all. I mean, Fournette, he was active. Did he play, did he even get a snap?
No, that's my thing with Cook, though, is the route participation just isn't there. Like, the opportunity to catch passes just isn't there. And that's where we thought his fantasy value was going to be. Especially the upside case for Cook was like through the receiving. And like, I think a game script like this should set up well for him, but no, they prefer Latavius Murray on those blocking situations.
Yeah. They got down to the 3 yard line or inside the three. Josh Allen had the touchdown run in the first quarter and Latavius Murray was in. I wanted to say this, Dan, about Gabe Davis.
Yeah.
So yeah, as Jacob mentioned, I was really interested to see if they would continue using him is a more short area guy, but no, he went back to the old Gabe Davis. And the Bengals, I mentioned this on the starter sit episode, the Commanders are the team that we talk about. They always get beat by the deep ball. The Bengals are basically second worst coming into this game. Teams throw deep on the Bengals. They came into this game with the most air yards per pass attempt against in the NFL. I think they were giving up the second most completions of 20 or more air yards. Well, I thought this was an interesting matchup because Josh Allen has really struggled there since hurting his shoulder. And in this game, he was 0 for 4 on pass attempts of 20 or more air yards. And in his last four games, he's 3 for 20 for 86 yards on those pass attempts.
Wow.
So that's why I have like almost no faith in Gabe Davis unless he's doing what he did last week. And he didn't do what he did last week.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. That was one of the better Azer stats we've gotten in a long time.
Thank you.
So well done there. But I think the disappointment.
No, it's just a stat, people. It's not that big of a deal. All right. Thank you. Thanks, Dan.
I like that. Look, the frustration begins with Gabe Davis. It's what Jacob said. We saw him line up tight splits last couple of weeks around the line of scrimmage, around the tight end, and that's going to lead to easier targets. We didn't see a lot of that in this game. And I think ultimately when I looked at this game, I had a misread of this game because I thought it'd be more of a shootout. And then I looked back at some things and I was like, wait a second. Cincinnati had a really good game plan against Josh Allen last year in the playoffs, and I believe that they just have a good feel for how to take away what Josh Allen likes to do, and that impacted the whole game. But there is one positive to take out of this, and it's my boy. It's Dalton Kincaid, who was, I believe, 10 for 81 in this game. I love Dalton.
I do too, yeah. 10 for 81 11 targets. Yeah.
Been calling for him for weeks. They're finally getting him involved. Now, this game was a little bit more of what I had seen in the early Kincaid days, which is like too much of the around the line of scrimmage stuff. I still think he can win intermediate, and they're not giving him the opportunity just yet. But there were a couple of routes where I saw him isolated one-on-one against a linebacker, and he had really good moves to beat that linebacker, really good releases off the line of scrimmage. And so he's somebody who's going to win constantly against whoever they throw at him, in my opinion, in man coverage. There's just not many people who can defend him, and he has a good quarterback. So I really like him rest of season. To me, he's in the top five mix at tight end, at least until Dawson Knox comes back.
98% route participation for Kincaid this week, which is by far the best. It was up from 85% last week.
Yeah, he had basically the biggest play of the game too. Unfortunately, though, it was a fumble when they were driving, but a great game for him. Top five is a slam dunk, I think, right now for him. I would say tight end three for me until Knox is back, ahead of Laporta, but right there with Laporta. I mean, they're very similar right now. I'm not missing anybody, am I? Kelsey, Andrews, Kincaid for me until Knox. And then what happens when Knox comes back? I just don't know. Obviously using different personnel groupings now, but he's playing so well. Can you really go back to, you know, the old days with Knox? We'll have, that's a conversation maybe for later when we talk tight ends. Jacob, what do we need to know about what the Bengals did yesterday with T. Higgins with a big game and Ja'Marr Chase with a rare bad game?
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about Chase. But yeah, if you're a T. Higgins fantasy manager, that was obviously exciting. They used him in the short intermediate area a little bit more than they had been. I don't have his first read data yet, but I would expect it's the highest data point that he's had all year. So that's really good because it's been a very disappointing season for T. Higgins. I think he might be the most disappointing fantasy player out there. And like, I think that maybe part of that had to do with injury. And then I think Burrow's injury early in the year affected things as well. But like going into this game, he was one of the worst PFF graded wide receivers in the entire NFL. So it's really good to get some positive data points on T. Higgins.
Yeah, he's an easy. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I was going to say he's an easy. I mean, it might be too late, but it might not be. I think he's a buy target right now. And you can call it a buy high, but I think there's just so many extenuating factors that led to his slow start. The ones Jacob brought up, the offense not being able to run a full playbook because Burrow wasn't healthy. And then Higgins, his injury himself. I thought he looked, just from the eye test, the healthiest he's looked by far this season. On the one slant that he almost took to the house in the red zone, he had a lot of juice on that. And the fact of the matter is this, they're going to always use extra attention to take away Ja'Marr Chase. This is why T. Higgins was so consistent as a fantasy factor last year for large stretches of the season. And I think we could be reaching that exact, you know, scenario again moving forward, outside of some games against the Ravens defense.
Okay. Well done, T. Higgins. And Joe Mixon, you're just going to continue to start him. You'll deal with the yards per carry. He faced a struggling run defense and ran 14 times for 37 yards and a touchdown. He did have five catches, but looks like the same guy as he was last year. Sportsline is where to go to get the Beyond the Box Score article written by Jacob Gibbs, plus fantasy content from Dave, Jamie, and Heath. DFS, best lineups. Gambling, it's all at sportsline.com. If you use the... Oh, so we always give you the monthly code. What's your Gibbs, right?
Promo code Gibbs.
Promo code Gibbs, G-I-B-B-S, $1 for your first month. But now I'm seeing we got this annual plan, and you can get 60% off the annual plan with the promo code FOLLOW. Or if you're looking on YouTube, you can scan the QR code. Promo code is FOLLOW, 60% off the yearly plan for Sportsline. And if you're watching on YouTube, Jonathan Coachman, or Coach, is just like, he's got something up his sleeve. He's just... He's ready to take us all down. News and notes. Daniel Jones tore his ACL, so he is out for the season. And, you know, I love reading Dan's Twitter feed. It populates my Twitter feed. It's like all Dan. Yeah, I know a lot of people are thinking he won't be ready for week one based on Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray, though, is one of the slowest ACL rehabs and recoveries I can remember. Yeah. Most quarterbacks, no matter when they get hurt, are ready by week 1, 2, 3, something like that. I mean, I did the research. This is why I was shocked that Kyler Murray wasn't ready earlier in the season, especially since he only had an ACL tear. I don't even think he had other damage. But I wouldn't count out Daniel Jones for week one, but I also wouldn't count out that Daniel Jones has started his last game for the Giants. So we'll see. From an immediate perspective, I mean, Dan, you don't want to roster any Giants pass catchers, do you, other than Waller in an IR spot?
No, this is going to get really ugly. The Giants don't have any options here. They're going to have to probably go with Tommy DeVito the rest of the season. Matt Barkley is on their practice squad. We'll probably get elevated to the roster. He's not NFL caliber arm talent. Neither is DeVito. Things will get better for this offense just because they'll have more continuity, but there's no like solution. You don't just sign Carson Wentz and be like, hey, here's a playbook, learn it, and try to get on the same page with receivers and learn all the calls. And this is what we talked about earlier on this show or other shows, the mailbag, with why teams can't just trade for Kirk Cousins, because it doesn't work like that at the quarterback position. So this is the offense. I think everyone gets downgraded. I still think you play Barkley, but I think Barkley is more of a back-end RB2 who just volumes his way toward like 8 to 12 points a week and maybe an occasional touchdown if they get lucky. But yeah, all the receivers are done. Darren Waller maybe in your IR spot, but that could be someone you don't count on either rest of season.
All right, other big news. Dallas Goedert's going to miss some time. He might go on IR. He has a fractured forearm, I believe.
Yep.
And they have a bye this week, but if he goes on IR, the bye doesn't matter. It's 4 games, not 4 weeks. Their next 4 games, I mean, look at this schedule. They're not going to have... Is this really their schedule? Do I have this right? I just need to make sure, because I basically put every good team in football on their schedule. I have to make sure that there's no type.
Who is it? I'll tell you if it's
Kansas
right.
Kansas City, Buffalo, San Francisco, Dallas. That's their next 4 games.
It's
That's
rough.
Amazing. Oh, I love it. It's great. I think it's good news for Devontae Smith. You know, I mean,
not that Goddard
was such a target hog, but this is exactly when Devontae Smith turned his season around. Difference is AJ Brown is sucking up all the targets like he was not last year, but
true.
All right. KJ Osborne left in the second quarter, Christian Watson injury, Josh Downs, Cam Akers may have torn his Achilles. Still waiting on that one here, but, do you guys consider Alexander's if Akers is out for the year? Do you consider Madison a must start running back?
No.
In the state of running back as it currently stands, I would say yes, just because. And I didn't think I would say this last week, but I have faith in Josh Dobbs to operate an offense and move chains by escaping pockets and running for first downs and keeping drives alive. So. I'll say yes, just based on the state of the running back market and how much volume he's going to get.
Josh Dobbs, second among all players in avoided tackles in week 9.
It's unbelievable. The one he avoided in the red zone was one of the best avoids I've seen by a quarterback almost ever.
Yeah, and Dobbs, I do think we have to really look into his deep ball issues, though, because I mentioned this.
Yeah.
I think
he's not a good thrower of the football. That's for
especially
sure.
Deep. It's so bad. I think he was like 0-for-10 on pass attempts of 30 or more air yards. So if I'm a Jordan Addison fantasy manager, I'm pretty nervous about that.
Yes. And I need to make a quick immediate correction because I said it was one of the best escapes from a pocket ever, but obviously it's not on the same tier of the Eli Manning Super Bowl 2007 escape for the David Tyree throw. So let's make that clear.
Okay, if anybody who listens to Dan's Giants podcast is listening now, he is very sorry. You can keep listening to Big Blue Panther. Yes. There were some other injuries, some other defensive injuries, but the biggest non-skill position injury is Jedrick Wills, the left tackle for the Browns, who was carted off. And that means if he's out for the year, and an air cast is typically a long injury, right? That means both of their tackles out for the year because they lost their right tackle in week 2, I think. And they were under pressure. Watson was under pressure a lot. Arizona had the 7th highest pressure rate in the NFL yesterday.
Right.
And they're usually terrible in that metric. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, advanced stats from Jacob and a quick Italian food tip from me to wannabe Italian Dan Schneier. We'll be right back.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top 5 leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
You like chicken parm, Dan?
Love chicken parm.
Jacob, chicken parm?
Who doesn't like chicken
Who
parm?
Who doesn't,
yeah, that's
right?
A great question. Who does not like chicken parm?
Maybe you guys are already in on this, but last year, I don't remember what the event was. Like, I don't know, some family event. I got this meal. chicken parm with vodka sauce.
Oh, a vodka sauce. Vodka chicken parm. Yes. Great. Adam, this is unreal. It's your first time ever having vodka chicken parm?
Second time. I had it last night. I ordered.
Only 3% of the country this is even offered.
What's
like
that?
You don't go. Like, do you think you're going to find a vodka chicken parm in Florida? Maybe Florida.
Of course.
You're gonna in other parts of the South and the Midwest. I don't. I know I don't.
Oh my gosh, jeez.
This is going to kill me.
The food snob is out, folks.
And I'm back, baby.
Oh, here he is, Jacob. You ever had?
Had a vodka chicken parm sub, Adam? It's even better.
That's what I had last night, for lunch actually, Jacob, and lunch today. Did you ever have that, Jacob?
Yeah, I actually made it last week.
No way.
That's weird. Now, Jacob, let me ask you, as a wannabe Italian, let me confirm a couple things as far as your chicken parm skills go. Do you do what you have to do, which is pound the chicken so it's thin chicken before you bread it and before you egg and bread it?
No, dude, I didn't pound the chicken.
You don't just take it out of the package as a fat chicken breast. Got to use one of those meat tenderizers and pound that thing in a plastic bag.
You got
all about it's paper thin. The more paper thin you get that chicken, the better it tastes.
That's right.
I'm learning.
Easy tip, right?
Uncle Slayer says you can have a lobotomy and still make a chicken parm. You can have them almost anywhere.
No, I said a vodka chicken parm, Uncle Slayer. I said a vodka chicken parm, Uncle Slayer, with homemade vodka sauce. You tell me your Italian restaurant you're getting that from in Mississippi.
Oh, dude, stop. What is with you? All right. I'm very sorry to all of our non-Northeastern friends here who don't
know what they're getting into, apparently. You know what they're getting into at this point.
Yeah, I guess so.
You're not finding good Italian food in a lot of places. Let's be honest.
Jeez, snap shares.
You're not finding great barbecue up here. There's other things you can't find up here. You know,
you can find anything in New York City, though.
No,
anything.
That was just a lie to make them feel better.
Okay, snap share stuff. Jerome Ford played 64% of the snaps. Kareem Hunt played 29%. Ford ran 20 routes compared to 6 for Kareem Hunt. Zach Charbonnet played more snaps than Ken Walker for the second straight game, and it wasn't just garbage time. So this one is a little alarming right now.
And he didn't do anything with them, by the way.
Neither guy did. They really got whooped up front, just completely outclassed by the Ravens. But Jacob, this is your area here. So we're looking at snap counts, advanced stats. Tell us what you've been noticing.
Yeah, so I had two topics that I wanted to talk about, and then I was going to run through some quick stats, and you could pick apart anything you want there. But the two topics that I wanted to talk about, you actually just mentioned each of them. The first was Jerome Ford. The usage was much better for him this week, and I think really he's shaping up as like clearly their lead guy. We saw him be the clear lead guy down the stretch in week 8 when the game was close. They really didn't use him early in the game, but they did lean on him late in the game in week 8, which I thought was interesting since, you know, he was rumored to have a high ankle sprain. And so he immediately played, and then they kind of like reserved him for when they needed him. And then this week, 60% of the snaps inside the red zone, 50-50 from inside the 10 with him and Hunt. And then outside the red zone, he's clearly the guy. Pierre Strong basically went away, barely played in this spot. The other guy I wanted to mention for the Browns is Amari Cooper. He's the only player in the NFL with 100 air yards in every game this season.
Whoa.
And yeah, 23% target per route run rate on the year, which is honestly amazing considering his average depth of target is 15.6 yards. To be targeted at such a high rate on such a deep route tree is really wild. Also wild is his 2.26 yard per route run rate, given the quarterback play that he's had to contend with in Cleveland. So you guys both watched Cleveland. I wouldn't never. and so I wanted to throw it to you. What do you like? The quarterback play has been terrible, obviously, but do we think it's going to get any better?
Yeah, I'll let Dan answer that. Let me just give a few statistics here. Deshaun Watson, I'm not going to count the game where he threw, I think, 5 passes and re-injured himself. But Amari Cooper has 89 or more yards in 3 of 4 games with Deshaun Watson. So he seems like an easy start. I think the first game of the year was the only bad one, and Watson came into that game banged up. He's been hurt, right? So, anyway, I have some notes on what I saw there, but I watched this game because if you look at Deshaun Watson, look at his fantasy points in 4 starts and finishes. He didn't finish yesterday, but you know what I mean? 4 games where he actually played, right? 22.7, 13.6, 25.2, 23.0. And that's a must-start guy if I bought it. So I had to see, was he good? How was he throwing the football? And I thought he was horrible. Dan, what did you think?
Yeah, it was not good tape. It was ugly tape. This is what happens when, you know, I feel like partially this is an issue of not a lot of time. practicing, not a lot of time getting the rapport down with all these players. It seems like he's got it down with Cooper. Like you said, they've had a good thing going. But outside of that, I don't see it with Eli Moore like I expected it to see it with Watson and Moore, David Njoku, and anywhere, not including the red zone. So I just think that right now this passing game is off from a timing standpoint, from a rhythm standpoint. The injury to Jedrick Wills, like you said, is going to make things a lot worse. They now have issues with protection, especially on the ends. At any point, in my opinion, he could take a wrong hit to that shoulder and lose his velocity again, which I didn't think, quite frankly. I don't know how you felt about this, Adam. I didn't feel like it was quite good in this game to begin with. And it's tough to throw. Like, here's the other thing. I've known this for a while. It's really tough to throw in Cleveland. And that's the thing. You look at all these quarterbacks. Take a look at some Cleveland games in November and December over the last few years and some of the quarterback stats from those games from any quarterback. And it's ugly. But it's not like Deshaun Watson right now, in my opinion, has the arm talent to cut through that nasty weather and wind there. So we're relying on timing and we're relying on ball placement and we're relying on rhythm in the passing game. And that's just not there right now. So it's tough for me to buy into this turning around anytime soon.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, if you go back to week 4 or 5 and Derek Carr and the way he looked that one game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I believe, and he didn't look like a professional quarterback. I really don't think he should have been out there. But he got over that injury pretty quickly. So if Watson has now gone from I can't play to I think I'm going to play to okay, I'm playing this week. And I also felt like he got better as the game went on. He threw about 15, 20-yard pass to Amari Cooper. I think late in the third quarter, that was probably his best throw of the game. And then he probably one-upped it with a deep ball shot to Amari Cooper near the end zone. That was fantastic, followed up by a Kareem Hunt touchdown run. But early in the game, he was terrible. His deep ball, like he threw a deep ball to Amari Cooper in the first or the second quarter, and it traveled about 45 air yards. And it looked like he threw that ball as far as he could almost. Like he put everything he had into it. So I think they could be really good, and he could be dangerous if he gets his arm strength back. I just don't know when that's happening. It was not in this game. So I don't really have it. I can't tell the future, but I can tell you that he was definitely not 100% in this game.
No.
And Jacob, you had a stat. I mean, he was really inaccurate on short stuff too. And there were just some really ugly throws.
Yeah, 17% off target rate on throws that were 10 or fewer air yards. The league average is 7%.
Right.
Watson's at 17.
Right. So next week at Baltimore, no chance. Yep. No chance. If he does well, if he shows his arm is back, then maybe I think about starting him against Pittsburgh, at Denver, at the Rams. It's not too bad. But next week at Baltimore, he's a sit for me.
Right.
What else? We got? Anything else, Jacob?
The other big topic I wanted to talk about was Seattle's offense. There's not a whole lot to point to statistically that I found interesting, other than, again, Charbonnet. We already hit on the Charbonnet out-snapping Kenneth Walker, running more routes than Kenneth Walker. Well, Charbonnet didn't do anything with his opportunities, really. It was a brutal matchup, and the offense just got dominated up front. It's more so a negative note for Walker. But you guys watched Seattle a little bit. What did you think?
I don't know. I just think they had a really bad game. I can't, like last week when Walker didn't have a ton of work, it was easy to chalk it up to the injury. I don't know what the deal is this week. I think he's definitely coming off the field. Ken Walker's definitely coming off the field in the 2-minute drill, even the 4-minute drill. That's going to be Charbonnet or maybe even Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
But are they just going to keep giving him the ball? I just don't have the answer. I just want to check their schedule. Because if they fall behind big like this, then no, it's going to be bad for him. Next week they get Washington. So Washington, then the Rams. I mean, I feel like that should be more favorable. I'm confused. I don't know. I don't think he's losing his job to Charbonnet, but I do think the split is going to be a little bit more even. And you might get a lot of like 13, 14 carry, 2-catch games from Walker, and if he doesn't score, he could be pretty disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's without a doubt. I think I didn't actually get a chance to watch this one, Jacob, but from what I've been reading, there has been some real regression when it comes to Geno Smith from a touchdown rate, from a bunch of different statistics. And those who have watched the tape said he doesn't look like the same player that he did last year. It's surprising to me just because I feel like he was so good on tape last year, just crazy good. Like if you go back, he was one of the 4 or 5 quarterbacks pushing the ball downfield into tight windows vertically. And I'm just not seeing that a lot this year yet. I would love to go back after this and watch the tape of this game. I just feel like it's going to look a lot like that Lions game we broke down versus the Ravens a few weeks ago, where, you know, the game was like 28-0 early and the game script was horrible and they were in pass only mode, and that kind of kills your whole offense. But this is now multiple weeks, I think, with Geno Smith struggling and with the passing game not as it was last season. So it's definitely alarming to me.
It's the whole season. Yep. And you know what? It's going to be interesting because this week he gets Washington and they're basically a tonic for quarterbacks. But I don't really have that much faith in him. And I mentioned this on yesterday's show. DK Metcalf got shut down by a great cornerback, Marlon Humphrey, and he just always gets shut down by great cornerbacks, basically. So he might bounce back against Washington, but the DK Geno connection is off. The interceptions are way up. That was what was down last year for Geno. And then they started creeping up in the at the end of the year. And he's just throwing too many bad interceptions. And they only had the ball for 19 minutes and 56 seconds, which is like a trademark of the Seahawks last year and getting back to it this year. And you cannot, your running back is almost never going to have a good game if they have the ball for 20 minutes. It's hard. I see that all the time. I talked about that with Ramondre Stevenson, and he did have a good game because he had a long run, but the Patriots never have the ball. The Seahawks right now are having similar issues, I think.
One thing I'd bring up on Geno, I noticed this yesterday. I was digging into Patrick Mahomes' stats, actually. I think Mahomes is one of the more sensitive quarterbacks to all the too high safety stuff. You talked about how the Bengals really know how to bother Josh Allen. I think the Bengals really know how to bother Mahomes as well. Mm-hmm. And we've seen a lot of defenses adjust in that way. And he's holding the ball longer, Mahomes is, and taking his first read much less often. And when I was looking into first read target rates last year compared to this year, Geno Smith really stood out as well. 57% is Geno Smith's first read target rate. Russell Wilson is the only quarterback who is lower in 2023. Geno was at 69.5% last year, so right around league average. So I think there's some lack of trust in the offense. I think, he's just not very comfortable out there. And yeah, it's pretty tough right now for Seattle.
And it could also be that his first reads are just not getting open at the same rate. I think, Adam, you had a note about DK Metcalf not winning one-on-one in this matchup. I haven't studied them extensively this year, but DK Metcalf's battled injuries all year. He may not be winning the same way he was winning outside. I mean, a big part of any kind of passing offense is, do you have an X receiver who can win outside on the boundary consistently against man coverage? Because that opens up the rest of your offense, and it allows and forces the opposing defense to allocate more resources, such as cloud coverage, rolling a safety over the top, and taking them away from other areas of the field. If that's not happening and he's not winning those one-on-one routes, then it makes it really difficult, in my opinion, to keep the passing game on schedule.
Just some good news here. Jedrick Wills, left tackle for the Browns. He's going on IR, but he has an MCL sprain and is expected to return this season.
That is good news.
So that's avoiding worst case scenario there. Anything else, Jacob?
Yeah, I'm just going to run through some quick notes. So Trey McBride, we talked about extensively last week. The role shrunk a little bit this week. Obviously, the entire offensive production shrunk. It was pretty insane. That was 58 yards, I think. 58 offensive yards on 48 plays for the Cardinals.
Oh, so my God.
Obviously, it's tough to produce within that framework. But what stood out to me was his his route participation was down to 63% after being at 88% last week. I don't know what that is. Maybe it was just because it was such a crap shoot out there that they just were letting him chill. Maybe he got banged up. I don't know. But like, he just didn't play as much. And so he's going to need to get that up if he's going to be relevant for fantasy. So that's something to monitor over the upcoming weeks. Keaton Mitchell, I think, is going to be a popular add this week. He only played 13 offensive snaps, 9 rush attempts and 13 offensive snaps. He did lead the entire NFL in avoided tackles with 8 on 9 attempts. So that's obviously fun, but I don't know if he's somebody who's actually going to play. Do you think he just played his way into the role? You watched him, right, Dan?
Say that again. You have to repeat that. I got something from work. I'm sorry. Apologize. I got a Slack message.
Do you think Keaton Mitchell just played his way into a bigger role? I feel like they trust Gus, you know? Like, I feel like they trust the guys that they have.
So
he only played in garbage time.
No, Keaton Mitchell?
No. He didn't only play in garbage time.
Justice Hill only played in garbage, but mostly played in garbage time. Keaton Mitchell played before that.
Okay. Yeah, he had a carry early in the second quarter that I charted. He had a few, but here's the thing. And I did a full evaluation of Keaton Mitchell on film, and I got to be honest, guys. I was incredibly impressed with what I saw on tape from Keaton Mitchell. He is fast, but it's not just the speed, which I was impressed with. It's the body control and the body positioning. So he had a one run early in the game where he just maintained so much balance through contact, and he just shows the ability. This is an inside zone play. And I put this on Twitter. If anybody wants to see the clip of it, we can't put it up here. But he gets skinny through a crease even after the left tackle blows his block immediately. And I've seen so many people run that inside zone and not be able to process where these creases are going to be. And I feel like he was really good at processing that. They use draw, they use counter, they use power gap for him. And it reminded me a lot of a Beyond the Box Score episode we did last season at the end of the year, Adam. I don't know if you remember this or Jacob, where we broke down J.K. Dobbins. And I was talking about how I liked how the Ravens were doing a lot of things to get him in space with power gap concepts and counter. And it seems like that's the idea here. It's similar to what the Dolphins do with Devin Achane, but it's not exactly the same because they're not using him in, at least not yet, in motion from, you know, outside as a receiver, things like that. But they are doing a lot of power gap concepts to get him into space. And there's another run later in the game, his 60-yard run, just a great example of an individual play making that happen. So on that play, Keaton Mitchell, they're just running a toss outright. The 22 is the defender there, and he plays it perfectly for Seattle, which is to force contain back to the inside. He takes away the outside, forcing contain. Mitchell makes the jump cut, gets through, 22 plays it perfectly, gets his arms on the tackle, and Mitchell just has the contact bounce to shake that off and then shows creativity later in the run. And then obviously the touchdown run was incredibly impressive. Like I said, it's just a great job of finding a crease there where it might have not been. So I wonder if it is a lot of us, if the situation will evolve, and you guys can probably comment on this as well, because obviously they have so much trust in a player like Gus Edwards. But I wonder if the situation does evolve to the point where they look at this like, it's out the bag now. We can't put this back. You know, we can't put the cap back on this because he adds a different speed element to our offense. He adds a different playmaking element to the offense, and he's making correct reads right now and finding creases and processing a lot better than he was quote unquote given credit for. And this was a good example because you saw this just like with Devin Achane. He's billed as this only speed guy. And then you watch him, you're like, wow, his contact balance is pretty good. Wow. He makes pretty good reads between the tackles. He processes pretty well. And I think that could be the same case with Keaton Mitchell. It's not the same kind of offense. So I don't want to say this is going to be the next Devin Achane, but I think they're not going to be able to just put him back on the bench and let him, you know, sit there because he just adds so much more, in my opinion, than both Hill and Edwards.
Hmm. Yeah. I appreciate that you're getting Achane's last name right.
I'm trying.
We do have to work on Devon Achane.
Oh, it's Devon. It's considered Devon. Yeah. I don't know about that.
Considered. I mean, it is Devon. I would know, say it's considered. Like your last name is considered Schneier, you know, but let's go. Mitchell, Heath said he's a must-add player. I kind of pushed back on that because there's a split, because Lamar Jackson and Gus Edwards are much more likely to get goal line work than Keaton Mitchell.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yeah, I do think, I mean, if you were excited about Jaleel McLaughlin, that didn't end up working out when Javonte's back. But but Achane did. So, yes, I see all the same things. Like, this guy's got some burst and some potential.
And it will be somewhere in between
that,
right?
Like,
the Achane situation, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, Adam, but like the reason why we should assume it should be somewhere in between there, and I'm sure you agree with this, is that Achane was immediately getting red zone touches, which we don't know or think if Mitchell will get. And Achane was also getting those touches I talked about where they were designing him in motion. So I don't think it's that, but I also don't think it's McLaughlin, because this is a much better offense than the Denver Broncos offense, the Baltimore Ravens offense. And things are so open now in this offense because of how they are pass first under Todd Monken and running a lot of 11 personnel. So I just think the situation is more similar to the Dolphins, just not quite there.
Okay. I just want to say one thing about the Ravens and Lamar Jackson, because I think, you know, he's having a really good year, but from a fantasy standpoint, he's not. He's number 6 per game in 4-point, number 9 per game in 6-point per passing touchdown leagues. And he's a victim right now of Gus Edwards and Keaton Mitchell and all these rushing touchdowns. The Ravens have 6 running back rushing touchdowns in their last 2 games. Jackson has struggled in both of those games from a fantasy standpoint. I don't really know what to make of that, other than I would say he's throwing the ball really well. He's in total control, and there will be more touchdowns for him. But Lamar Jackson is one of 5 quarterbacks that does not have a touchdown pass of 20 or more yards. Lamar Jackson, Ryan Tannehill, Daniel Jones, Desmond Ridder, and Bryce Young. So you're getting no explosive passing plays. And then you've got this Gus Edwards problem. So it's like,
and it's shocking too, because a lot of the, like, what Lamar was great at under Greg Roman was those explosive pass plays.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, that's what they were using Marquise Brown for. They don't have that guy now.
They should, though, with Zay Flowers, man. Zay Flowers was so explosive on tape in college. And even Beckham, I've seen win on a lot of his one-on-one routes too. I almost wonder if this is more of an issue of when you have the Greg Roman offense and it's all run first, you can run play action. There's a lot of space in the middle of the field. When you have a pass first offense, there's too high safety.
I would not call this a pass first offense, though. I think they have the lowest pass rate in the NFL.
Well, then it's definitely not a pass first offense. But pass first personnel, I should say. Pass first personnel.
It seems
for sure.
Different. It seems different, but they still really don't throw much. But
pass first personnel will still lead to a very different counter by the defense. They're not going to use base personnel. They're going to use nickel and dime and sub packages. And I wonder, and I haven't watched enough Ravens, but I wonder if that's taking away the big play. I'd have to see what the, Jacob, maybe you could find this, or I know where I can find this, what the usage of opponents versus the Ravens is from a, how much are they using cover one? How much are they using cover six? How much are they using cover, like, how much are they using two safeties back there or middle of the field closed one? But I know against, when Greg Roman was there, there was a lot of middle of the field closed looks and with a lot of space for deep shots.
All right, guys. Jacob, why don't we finish up with your stats here, because we haven't gotten to one of our topics was Keaton Mitchell, so we did cover that, but we have three more big topics to get to, so wrap it up with the stats.
Okay, I just looked up real quick. Lamar Jackson's off-target rate on deep throws is right in line with the league average, which is actually a huge improvement for him from last year when he was clearly the worst on deep throws. Zay Flowers, super disappointing game yesterday. He ran a team-high 31 routes on 37 dropbacks and only drew one target.
It was Beckham's birthday. That's what it honestly was. So
it's a birthday. We got to look for these narratives, right?
I don't see that on True Media, Jacob.
Yeah, last week was Tank Dell's birthday, and everybody got excited about that. And then,
push back on the birthday narrative.
Let's run through a few quick ones here. The Bears' backfield, we saw Deontay Foreman return to dominating the work. 59% snap rate, only 28% for Roschon Johnson. 20 rush attempts to just 2 for Roschon Johnson.
Game script, right?
Yeah, for sure. But honestly, I just was a little bit shocked to see Roschon with such low involvement. 75% snap rate for Jonathan Taylor, only 19% for Zach Moss. 75% route participation as well for JT. 5 targets, caught them all, scored a receiving touchdown. That's super exciting. 51% snap rate for Raheem Mostert. Salvin Ahmed ran more routes, and Mostert's snap rate has been below 55% in 3 straight games.
Whoa.
Just wanted to bring this up because I think Devon Achane is going to have a really big role when he gets back.
Yeah,
he looked good running and cutting last week.
If they feel like he can handle it, that's my only thing. Like, I don't think he's going to have that much bigger. I'm going to set the over under at 11 and a half carries per game for Achane.
I'm looking this up right now. I'm looking up. I just want to make sure that what I think is true about Devon Achane. No. Okay. Adam might be onto something. I thought he had more touches than he did at the collegiate level. I thought he was more of a workhorse than he actually was.
Is that Devon's brother? Because I don't know who Devon Achane is.
Oh, I keep calling him Devon Achane. Yeah. Nope. I'll get Devon at some point, but at least I've hit the Achane.
Someone's complimented your hoodie, Dan.
Oh, yeah. This is a Grand Canyon hoodie. There we go.
Okay.
Appreciate that. It's good to hear a compliment about my wardrobe, because all I get is negativity from Adam and Jamie when it comes on the mailbag show. When it comes to my wardrobe, that hoodie's too big on you. This is a nice looking hoodie. Thank you, Captain Spock. I appreciate that. I need all the compliments I can get on a dark day like today. The Giants are 2-7. Their team is collapsing in front of itself, just like 2021, just like 2017. It's impossible to watch this team. It's impossible to root for this team. So thank you. At least I can go to sleep tonight knowing I wore a nice hoodie and people liked it.
Also, this Uncle Slayer says Grand Canyon has the best chicken barb. All right, Jacob, I'm sorry to keep cutting you off. Go ahead.
2 more quick ones. Jahan Dotson, targets over the past 3 games, 8, 10, and 8. That's mostly been a product of Washington producing a ton of play volume overall, but still encouraging to see him get going. I thought he might move to the slot a little bit more without Curtis Samuel, but that wasn't the case. He only had a 31% slot rate. He's continuing to be used down the field. So I think it's going to be inconsistent, but at least we're seeing something from Dotson. So that's great. And the last one is Mike Gesicki. I brought him up last week. as somebody who might emerge for the Patriots. He led the Patriots in routes run this week. He drew one target. It was 28 yards downfield. So I don't know if there's actually going to be any fantasy viability with Gesicki, but leading the team in routes run is interesting. I think they are pretty desperate for a downfield threat. I like Pop Douglas as much as the next guy, but that's not his game. He's a short yardage guy. So just an interesting name to keep in mind if you do need tight end help.
Tight end help. That's our first topic. When we come back, we'll talk about the depth of the tight end position. We'll be right back on Fantasy Football Today.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus. The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a CAN model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
So we only have four big topics today, and one of them is about Keaton Mitchell, and we already talked about him, so you can check the time code for the probably the advanced stats section. I don't know, whatever it might be, but you'll find it if you're skipping around. But the first topic comes from Ed, and he says, the tight end landscape may be changing. At this time this season, there are actually some borderline startable guys emerging. Even moving forward, there is some promising young talent at the position, making for a deeper position next season and beyond. You guys agree or disagree with this take about tight ends?
I completely agree with this take about tight ends. And I'll say this, you know, a year ago, I said this was the most exciting and fun tight end draft class I've ever seen studying this game. I was huge on a lot of these players, and we're seeing immediate impacts from some of them. Dalton Kincaid, Sam Laporta. I even would put Luke Musgrave in that mix, even though his quarterback play is as bad as it gets. I do think Jordan Love might be the worst quarterback in the NFL this year, just when you consider how many clean pockets he's thrown from versus some of the other worst quarterbacks in the NFL and how they are on the bottom of the list of clean pockets. I saw a crazy stat on that this week, but he's still a great talent, Luke Musgrave. And I think we're looking at probably the best tight end. It might be the best tight end class in the last decade as far as immediate impact goes and then long-term success. So those guys will pace the way, and those guys will obviously be leaders at the position, I think, moving forward. So yes, I think we are in that at that point. I'm curious to get what your guys' take is on this.
Good, I don't know much. Kate Otten was super viable this week, played every snap and soaked up a lot of targets. And he's another interesting young guy. I love this class.
Yeah, I do too. I think that I'll just say this, first of all, good stat to back up Ed's case. Right now, there are 14 tight ends averaging 10 PPR fantasy points per game or better. Last year, there were 9. So 14 this year, right now. Last year, at the end of the season, there were 9. However, last year was just a really bad year for passing games. Quarterbacks were bad. Wide receivers were bad. Tight ends were bad.
So this year is a pretty bad year for passing games, no?
I don't think it's as bad as last year, but there's how many tight ends average 10 points per game or more over the last 5 seasons. 10, 12, 13, 13, 9. And this year it's 14. So it's a little bit better than what it's been in the past. I do think that I still don't buy it, because I've been doing this for 15 years basically, and it's always the same. Nothing ever changes. And the second you start buying into tight ends, they let you down. And that's going to keep happening. Well, you don't think Cole Kmet had a good stretch last year? Cole Kmet had back-to-back games last year with more than 20 fantasy points. And he scored something like 7 or fewer points in 3 of his next 4 games. You don't think Taysom Hill had a good stretch last year? Taysom Hill had a very good stretch. He had a 3-game stretch where he was looking like a guy that you're actually starting. And then were you starting Taysom Hill? Hell no, you were not starting Taysom Hill after that. He let you down. David Njoku's pretty interesting because he was really getting going for about 5 games or so, 4 or 5 games in the middle of the season last year. And then he got hurt and he came back and he was doing nothing. But it's another game with Deshaun Watson with very few targets. Yesterday he only had 6 targets. I don't think Deshaun Watson threw the ball that much. But Jake Ferguson. What a great example. 10 targets, 7 catches, 91 yards, and a touchdown. Here are his targets in 8 games. 7, 4, 7, 7. Okay, that's 7 targets in 3 of the first 4 games. Certainly sounds like a must-start tight end, right? Okay, his next 4 games, a combined 8 targets. If you... I don't think there's anything you can do about this. My advice to you is... find a tight end that's either going to get the most targets or be on the best offense. So a guy who could be second in targets on a good offense is very appealing. And that is Jake Ferguson to me. He could be second in targets. He is second in targets right now, I think. David Njoku, that's a key here. In the first 3 games with Watson, Elijah Moore was getting a ton of targets. Yesterday, Elijah Moore, I think, had 2. That's a positive development for David Njoku. If he can be second on the team in targets with a fairly healthy Deshaun Watson, he could be good. But all of these guys are going to frustrate you. Don't kid yourself. Don't kid yourself. So let's talk about the ones that I think are no-brainer slam dunk starts that we all think are that. It's Kelce, Andrews, Laporta. For now, it's certainly Kincaid. I would have said Goddard. That's gone now. I would say McBride. I actually, with Kyler Murray back,
Kyler,
I think I have that confidence. I got to see it, and I don't know how long Ertz is out for. He's out for, I think, two more games at least. But I'd say McBride. I don't know if you agree. And is there anyone else?
Hockenson.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yes, Hockenson for sure.
Evan Ingram has really been
Evan
great.
Ingram was on a bye. Damn it, I forgot about him. Let me pull up the tight ends.
So Dalton Schultz.
Stop talking. Real, I mean, sure. This week, what about week 8? He was terrible in week 8.
What did you just say before that, Adam?
I don't know why. What did I say?
There was something that sounded interesting. And I'm a happy listener. Did you hear that, Jacob?
I heard it.
I didn't say anything.
I don't think he said what we thought we heard him say, but we'll leave that up to the listeners. And if they deem it to be what we thought we heard him just say, this could be monumental for the podcast. Considering some of the moments I've had slip ups, and let's see what happened there. We'll go back.
You gotta send me the private chat. Let me know what the heck I just said. All right, yeah, sorry. So I should have pulled up the list of tight ends. So Kelce, and this is points per game in PPR. Kelce, Andrews, Hockenson, Laporta. Number 5 is Kmet. I'll call him amazing. I'll call him a must roster guy. And sure, for now he's a must start. You think he's just like immune to having a 4-yard game? I don't think that.
Right. No. I think 2 weeks ago he had 0 targets, right?
No.
Yeah. George Kittle is 6th in points per game. Wait till Debo and Ayuk are back. You're going to be pissed off more often than not. That's going to be starting next week with Kittle. Ingram, yes. Ingram, you start every week in PPR, but he doesn't have I don't think he has a red zone target. He doesn't even have a touchdown this year.
Wow.
Schultz is toward the top of the list, but of the next group. But I don't think he's a slam dunk. Of course, next week the Bengals give up the most fantasy points to tight ends. So, like, he might be good, but I think CJ Stroud might struggle against the Bengals next week. But this is my opinion on tight end. You think these guys are going to be consistent for you? You are wrong. What do you guys think?
I mean, I think there will be cases again where there will be some guys who can break out and be consistent. Kincaid without Knox, Laporta, but. You have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. And I'll say this, my take about tight ends remains, don't get fooled into this next draft season. Please don't use your 3rd, 4th, 5th round picks on guys that get propped up the board at the tight end position.
Okay, so we have a note here. I'm getting fined for dropping the F-bomb.
Yes, you see that?
After further review, the ruling that Adam
you
said
see
the
F-bomb
stands. I did not mean to
did
say
it.
That. It's not the first time that's happened. All right, next up, topic number 2 is Keaton Mitchell. So topic number 3. No. Oh, Bijan. That's the one.
Oh, yeah.
From Miles McDonald and many other concerned fantasy managers. Jacob, I'll let you go first. What to do with Bijan Robinson?
I'm stealing an answer from my guy, Pat Fitzmaurice. I love Pat. You got to follow him if you don't. He's very funny and an incredibly accurate ranker. What are you doing with Bijan moving forward? Same thing I've been doing all year, starting him and directing a string of expletives at Arthur Smith every week. I don't know. I don't know what we can do. Like, his role is shrinking. They don't use him in the red zone.
The red zone stuff's absolutely crazy because he had so much success for them early in the season in the red zone as a receiver, a running back, or a decoy. And now they're running end arounds to Jonnu Smith in the red zone. I think Matt Waldman, who we've had on the podcast a bunch for the Dynasty Show, did a great great breakdown on Twitter. You guys can find it. His Twitter is Matt Wallman, of how just unbelievably you watch the breakdown yourself. You'll get just as frustrated as I was with Arthur Smith after watching it. And, you know, Arthur Smith is Arthur Smith. He's going to do his thing. But not having Bijan in every red zone snap, to me, has no logical sense behind it. And I won't come around to the other side of that argument, no matter what Arthur Smith or anyone tells me. And it's frustrating for fantasy owners. For fantasy managers, I don't exactly know. I can tell you one thing, because I watched all of his rushing attempts, if you guys want to hear about that. I think one of the biggest issues is that we have from last year to this year is, and I haven't looked into the impact of or the exact reason why, maybe you guys have, there's been injuries on mobile. This run blocking is just nowhere near what it was last year. They were there was a weekly teach tape in the run game last year from the Falcons. Interesting concepts in the run game that Arthur Smith was running that made him diverse and unique versus the rest of the NFL. Now we're just seeing a lot of the same type of run concepts, but not working and not getting any push up front and being,
But Dan, he's averaging 5 yards per carry. Tyler Allgeier is averaging 3.2 yards per carry. He doesn't even need good run blocking. The guy has not disappointed. It hasn't been him who's disappointed. It's not like a Tony Pollard situation where he's got this great role. It's just the role. I saw this tweet from Bill Barnwell, and he making fun of Arthur Smith. He says, there's a reason why the Falcons didn't give Bijan Robinson a touch on those three goal plays, but you wouldn't understand it. Too complicated. Got to be in the room to understand why the Jonnu Smith jet sweep is the right idea. When I log on to Twitter, it's either a Dan Schneier tweet about the Giants, which I love. There's a reason, because I click on them, so they stay populated. Or it's 50 fantasy people ripping Arthur Smith. Yeah. And there's nothing you do. I will say that, what he was being saved by earlier was the receiving stuff. And he's got, I think, 2 catches on 9 targets in 2 games with Taylor Heinicke.
That's the killer.
And they don't look really in sync right now. I looked at those targets. Some of them were throwaways, but they're not really connecting.
Sure.
So they got to get him in space more. If I told you that the Atlanta Falcons are averaging the 6th most plays per game in the NFL, and they lead the NFL in running back carries, you would think Bijan Robinson might be like the number one player in fantasy, but it's not even close. It's so frustrating. If this is my hope, they have Arizona next week. Arizona is terrible against the run. And going into this week, at least, they saw the most running back carries in football. This is an opportunity for him and Allgeier to have 15 or more carries and for Bijan to have 80 yards and a touchdown. And maybe they go into their bye week after that and they come out of it and they say, it's time. We're unleashing Bijan Robinson. Because Arthur Smith, I hope they freaking lose to the Cardinals. I hope they get blown. Then it wouldn't help Bijan. But I hope they lose. And I hope he's coaching for his job and realizing, if I don't get my best players the ball, I'm gone. And that's the only hope I have for Bijan returning first round value.
And I just want to clarify one thing earlier. When I was talking about how the run concepts and the run blocking wasn't what it was last year, and there were so many good examples of it last year, it's not a knock on Bijan. Bijan's been making the most of what's there. But last year, there were so many open opportunities for Tyler Allgeier, who doesn't really have the same kind of level of athleticism burst or anything that Bijan Robinson has. And those opportunities, I'm just not seeing when I watch Atlanta Falcons run game this year. I'm just not seeing those open holes, the yards created before contact.
Dude, Tyler Allgeier is averaging 0.3 yards before contact per rush.
Right, yeah.
Bijan's averaging 1.7.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. 0.3. It's ridiculous. And
last year, Allgeier was at 1.35. 0.3 is unbelievable.
Yep. Allgeier was a good running back last year, so obviously he shouldn't be this bad. All right, this is from Rick. Is it time to sell Tony Pollard for James Conner? Who would you guys rather have?
Oh, interesting question. Tony Pollard, James Conner. We got into that depth. Conner comes back. Kyler Murray will be there. They can actually block a little bit in the interior. I still think I'm taking Pollard.
Yeah, it depends on what you think the Arizona offense is going to be like. They were pretty functional when Conner was healthy and was operating as the offensive centerpiece. I don't seem to have as much faith in Kyler Murray as everybody else does.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't feel like he's ever been an above average or even average NFL passer. And I worry that the rushing mobility won't be there in the way that it has been in the past. So, like, I don't know. Is that much better than Josh Dobbs?
Oh, I
don't
know.
Well, Dobbs didn't throw to Pollard. Pollard or to Connor.
Statistically, you're right about that, Jacob. But part of that is because, like, if you look at the numbers, I'm sure, like, that will back up that statement. And I'm not saying that makes it wrong, Jacob, because ultimately it comes down to what you produce. But I think a lot of that was because of the offense he played in. And it was that was among the worst coordinated and designed offenses I've almost ever seen.
That's true.
And some of his throws have been just outstanding, next level, elite level arm talent throws. I'm trying to remember some of them. That whole shot he took, like, down the right sideline, 40 yards down the field to win a game a couple years ago or last year. And it's just been plays. I still think his arm talent is phenomenal, Kyler Murray. It's just a matter of, can he find consistency and get into rhythm in the passing game? He wasn't able to with the last system, but I still have some hope. Like, I could never compare him to Josh Dobbs personally. I don't think they're even on the same level from an arm talent standpoint. But maybe you're still right, because maybe they both just can't produce and keep the passing game in rhythm. That I don't know. That could be the
case. Yeah, and I just think Dobbs is way better as a processor from what I've seen. So, when it comes to these two players, they're really interesting to compare, because James Conner has been at the very top of the running backs when it comes to advanced analytics. He's really been incredible this year. He's fourth in avoided tackle rate among qualified guys. Tony Pollard ranks 44th of 45. Kareem Hunt is the only one who has a lower rate. Explosive rushes, 6.7 for Pollard, ranks 43rd. 6.7% of his rushes have gone for 10 or more yards. James Conner is at 14.7. So, like, this is just bizarre world where these two have flipped. In the past, Conner's not been some explosive back, but he really has been this year. So if he comes back and is healthy and the offense is better, I think it's definitely possible that he could outproduce Pollard. The situation in Dallas is so much better, though. I think I would take Pollard.
I would take Pollard because I think he's safer. There are a lot of unknowns with James Conner, especially Kyler Murray. But the difference between Murray and Dobbs, I think, is Dobbs threw five. Conner had five catches in week one, I think, and then he had something like three the rest of the year with Dobbs. So Dobbs just wasn't throwing to running backs. Kyler does. And it's been a very, like, the lead running back for Arizona in the Kyler Murray era has been a really valuable player. James Conner was the number nine running back per game last year. And that was with him leaving two games early, I believe. And in 2021, he was the number nine running back per game. This year, if you remove the game he left with an injury where he scored 4.6 fantasy points per game, he was number 13 in non-PPR and number 18 in PPR, which, by the way, is better than Tony Pollard. I would say that if you told me Kyler was going to be pretty much what he has always been and Connor was going to stay healthy, I would actually take Connor over Kyler Murray. But too much uncertainty for me, I think. So I'll take... over Tony Pollard. So I'll take Pollard to play it safe.
To the point you made about Dobbs not throwing to the running backs as much, 14.5% target per route run rate for James Conner would be a career low. That's what he's at this year. But when he's had Kyler on the field last year, it was at 19%. And so if my speculation is correct that Kyler might not run as much, then we might see that rate rise even more. And Connor's always been pretty productive on a per target basis. So that's exciting.
I'm excited to get him back. I think he has a... Oh, yeah. Great. He has Cleveland. Oh, no. They just played Cleveland. I'm sorry. He has Atlanta. Right, yeah. He has Atlanta this week without Grady Jarrett. So we'll see how good their run defense is. Atlanta is sixth best against running backs, but again, they only played one game without their starting defensive tackle, and that was against Minnesota, who can't really run the ball. Well, that's it for Beyond the Box Score. Get yourself a chicken parm with vodka sauce. If you can't find it, Jacob will mail you some. And thanks, everybody. Someone earlier asked if Dan was wearing a sleeveless hoodie, which he isn't, but I think you probably inspired him to cut the sleeves off of the one he is wearing right now. Have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow with the Waiver Wire. Actually, live stream tonight. We'll talk to you tonight, 7:30 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS. Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Finally, not Linda got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii, Monday starting at 9/8 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.